Hi, good morning. I'm going to talk about very high energy observations of blazars. So first I'm going to briefly describe the blazar population that we detect in PV, then just briefly talk about the Veritas Observatory and our blazar observing program, then mention a couple of new blazar discoveries, and then talk about the flare of Markarian 421 in 2010, and the flare that BLAG did last June, and finally come to the conclusion. So this is the typical SED for an HVL, it's Markarian 421, with very high energy, so from ground-based telescopes, we see this part of the spectrum. So typically we see the falling part of the Compton peak in a range that goes more or less from the point where Fermi starts losing sensitivity around 100 GeV up to 10 GeV, 20 GeV, depending on the source and the spectral index. This is the distribution of AGNs detected with PV observatories so far. So there's a total of 48 objects detected till now. Most of them are HVLs, and then there are a smaller number of intermediate big BLAGs, a small number of low frequency big BLAGs, 3 flat spectrum radio quasars, and 4 radio galaxies. I'm basically just going to talk about the blazar in this talk, and later Jeremy will discuss misaligned AGNs and radio galaxies. If we look at the redshift distribution of these PV detected AGNs, we see that very nearby we see the radio galaxies as expected because they are not dim to us. And then at intermediate redshift, the HVLs dominate the population. And then at large redshifts, it's low frequency picked objects and FSRQs, the ones that we see. The farthest object detected so far is at redshift of 0.5. So it's a relatively low redshift, and the reason for that is that at high energies, the air production with the EBL becomes very a very large source of opacity. So at very large redshift, it's very hard for us to detect sources in this regime. You see that there's also a large number of sources. There are 9 sources that don't have a certain redshift. So basically, because we're detecting BLAG objects, we have a number of objects that don't have a redshift. So in this table, if we go from high frequency picked objects to low frequency picked objects, I'm just drafting the basic characteristics that we see at PV. In terms of spectral index, we usually go from hard spectral index for high frequency picked objects to very soft spectral indices for flat spectrum radio quasars and LBLs. That's expected because the inverse Compton peak will be basically shifting from high energies to low energies as you go down in the sequence. Then here I'm listing low state, which basically I'm trying to tell our ability to detect these sources when they are in quiescent state, so excluding flares. And we usually detect most of the HVLs, even if they are at a reasonably quiet state. For the intermediate objects, we detect very weak signals when they are in quiescent state, and we mostly detect them when they are flaring. And for the LBLs and for the FSRQ, well, for the LBLs, we haven't detected a low state yet. And for the FSRQs, it's even more dramatic because we basically just detect them one night when they go on a flare, and then the next night they are gone. And finally, in terms of variability timescales, we saw already a few years ago with PKS2155 and with Markarian 501 that there were very short variability timescales in high frequency peak objects down to around 3 minutes. But in the recent years, we have seen that also low frequency peak objects and FSRQs do these very fast flares. So now a short description of the technique. So you have gamma rays coming from maybe an AGN, and these gamma rays interact with the atmosphere, and we have basically big mirrors and pixelated cameras that record an image of the Cherenkov light that's produced by the particles in this extensive air shower. So we image those, we take the image of the shower, and by the shape of the shower, we are more or less able to tell if it's a gamma ray or if it's a charged cosmic ray. The direction of the shower tells us about the arrival direction and the impact parameter, and the size of this image basically tells us about the energy. So, this is the observatory that I'm describing. This is Veritas. It's an array of four telescopes, so we get four images of the for large showers. We get the, we trigger the four telescopes, so we get four images of the shower. It's situated in southern Arizona, so it's four telescopes, 12 meter diameter mirrors, and cameras which have 500 DMTs. And yeah, here I have a table with all the characteristics. So our energy range goes from around 100 GeV to a few tens of GeV with an energy resolution of about 15 to 20%. Our field of view is relatively small, especially if you compare it with Fermi, it's 3.5 degrees. We have a good angular resolution of about 0.1 degree. And our sensitivity is so we can detect a source that is as bright as 1% of the Crab Nebula in 26 hours of integration. If you go down in time, so here I'm plotting the observing time that it takes for us to detect a source of a certain flux in Crab units. So for a very weak source, we have to iterate a long time, 26 hours for 1% of Crab. But for bright sources or relatively bright sources, like 30% of Crab, we can get a 5-sigma detection in times as short as 7 minutes. So that means that we are able to do these very well-sampled light curves that sometimes allow us to derive these very fast variability timescales. So I'm going to briefly describe the Veritas AGN program. So that's a list of all the AGNs that Veritas has detected so far. There's only one non-blazer AGN, which is M87. The rest are mostly HBLs, a number of intermediate frequency peaked objects, and two low frequency peaked DLX. So our program is basically split in three main parts. First, we started 1.5 years ago a multi-year plan to observe 14 northern DB blazers, which include medium distance, hard spectrum HVLs, which are good for to put limits, to put constraints to the extragalactic background light. We also monitor the bright nearby HVLs, basically Mercurian 421, Mercurian 501, 1ES1959. And we also continuously look at the at all northern IBLs and LBLs to try to understand the gamma ray emission at the low edge of the blazar sequence. We also have a discovery program that we are somehow reducing because we're spending a lot of time to monitor these already known blazars, but we still have a discovery program which is mostly now based on target of opportunity observation. So whenever Fermi or an optical telescope sees a flare of a good DB candidate, we go and observe it. We have a very extensive program to try to increase the population of large spectrum radio blazars seen in DB, because there are only three so far. And we also try to cooperate with other observatories in joining multi-wavelength campaign. So this is a list in chronological order of the blazar discoveries that we did with Veritas. And basically, well, one of the good things of the observation we had so far is that for most of our, basically for all our discoveries, we were able to align a small multi-wavelength campaign that allowed us to produce nice quasi-contemporaneous SCDs covering the GV band with Fermi, the X-ray band and the optical and usually also the radio. And for the discoveries we had so far, a rule of thumb rule that works in describing the SED is that typically synchrotron self-compton works for HBLs, although there are a few exceptions, as Marcus mentioned the first day. And for intermediate frequency peak VLX, the objects seem to prefer SSC plus an external component, which is mainly due to the difficulties that SSC has to describe these SEDs, which are basically quantum dominated. So very briefly, two recent discoveries that we had in the last 2 years are objects that were not classified as blazars before because they are very low galactic light. And optical surveys and radio surveys are not as complete in the plane. So basically these two discoveries were guided by Fermi. We just pointed at two unidentified sources that showed a very hard spectrum in the Fermi band. And we looked at them, we detected a source, we were able to get smaller error circles than Fermi got, and detected these two sources that later turned out to be blazars at low galactic latitude. For this object, RXJ0648, we triggered follow-up optical spectroscopy, and we were able to derive a redshift of 0.179. We also took optical spectroscopy of the second object, RXJ0521, but we couldn't get any spectral lines. Its redshift is unknown. And what you see here is the Swift XRT light curve and the Veritas light curve. So we saw variability for this object in the Veritas light curve, which already is a very good hint that this object is a blazar, even if it's at very low galactic latitudes. And you see that there is some good hint of a flaring X-rays following or happening at the same time as the PEB flare. This is Markarian 421, and there was a very bright flare in February 2010. So you see here a multi-year light curve of Markarian 421 that we have with Veritas. You see that we keep observing it with a quite regular sampling. And you see this huge flare here where on February 17, the flash reached almost 10 grad. And you see the light curve for this night, and basically in each point in this light curve, we get a detection of more than 10 sigma, and each beam is only 2 minutes wide. So with PEB telescopes, if the objects are bright enough, we can produce very well sampled light curve with very short time beams. And you see that here, you can see doubling times in the order of 5 to 10 minutes. Now I'm going to talk about the VLAG flare. So VLAG was in a high state in end of May and June this year that Fermi saw, and it was also in a bright optical state. And at the end of June, we pointed at this object and we saw a very significant signal. So here you see the light curve over these 2 months where the source was in a high state. And you see that we basically don't see it most of the time or for the whole observation except for this one night. The spectrum is very soft. It's very similar to the one that MAGIC reported for the detection of VLAG. And if we zoom in, so during that night, we took 40 minutes of observations. So this whole range is 40 minutes. And you see that for VLAG, which is a low frequency peaked object, so it's not an HDL that we already knew that that showed very short variability timescales. You see that here you get a halving time of the flaps of about 15 minutes. So it looks like also low frequency peak VLAGs show this relatively fast variability. Going to multi-wavelength observations, so we've seen that one of the challenges that Fermi post to the AGN communities, these spectral breaks at around 2 GeV for flat spectrum radio waves and low frequency peak via lags. And one possible diagnostic to try to understand what's going on could be to try to see if this curvature or how this curvature behaves when you go beyond 100 GeV. So as I said, we keep observing the low frequency peak via lag, and we try to, so we have campaigns to try to discover more flat spectrum radio waves or to try to see what's going on with the spectrum at more than 100 GeV. But also the problem is that, as I said, these objects, we usually see them for one night or just when they are flaring. So it's not that you can go back and look at the GeV spectrum integrating over a few months, because those two spectra, you cannot really match them. So one program that we tried to establish last year, and so far it's only for the two northern flat spectrum radio quasars detected at TV, is to ask for pointed observations with Fermi whenever we see a flare, or basically whenever we are able to detect these objects from ground. So here you see that's the spectrum that, a simulated spectrum that Fermi could reconstruct in 12 hours of observation, which would be one night of our data. And you see that in survey mode, the spectrum doesn't extend beyond 2, 3, 4 GeV. But if you point at the object for these 12 hours, you see that this is the exposure with time, and you see the exposure in green is for pointed mode, so the exposure increases, and that allows you to reconstruct the spectrum beyond 10 GeV, and then try to match it with our spectrum about 100 GeV. So yeah, that's just my summary. Yeah, well, we didn't try to, I mean, you see that the variability timescale that you would see is probably not shorter than 2 minutes, so you would probably try to split your signal too much. So, I mean, it's a matter of trying to keep the raising slopes and the falling slopes statistically significant. So if you chop your signal too much, you will start seeing random fluctuations, and you would see that you see variability could be faster than what we are looking at. Yeah, I mean that's a paper that's in preparation, and then we're doing the proper statistical analysis of the light. Well, these 3 minutes that I mentioned, this is the doubling time that Hess got for PKS2155. And in principle, I would assume that most people would understand that in principle. So, well, the spectrum that we got is very soft, and it's basically the same spectral index that Magic got during the detection, the first detection a couple of years ago. So it doesn't seem that the spectral index changed. It's quite bright, or though, because it reads around.
It's consistent with the continuation of
the
lab.
You mean comparing it with the lab?
The lab was the 1.8.
Yeah, so it looks like there's a...
But can it be extrapolated? Your guess is not completely combined.
Yeah, we don't have the combined spectrum yet, but it doesn't look like it's a really good match.
Probably, yes.
You mean more than the actual variability timescale?